Welcome to Bite Size Human Geography, a podcast meant for students and anyone who wants a better understanding of the world. We investigate global issues using human geography concepts. It's human geography made simple. I'm wondering if where you live sounds like this. I'm betting it probably doesn't, because if it does, then that means that you're living in Rome, which of course would be the best place on earth to live, but for most of us, that's probably out of reach. These are the bells of Maria Maggiore, which are one of the main churches in Rome. Beautiful church, if you have a chance to go visit it. It's a basilica, actually. And the recording that I have here was the recording that I took last year when I was there with my family. And I have a habit of trying to record sounds of places that I travel, just because every place sounds differently. And so these were the bells that I recorded outside of Maria Maggiore. I want to welcome you to season two of the Bite Size Human Geography podcast. My name is Kara Smart, and I am so happy to be back. I took a break, a little sabbatical of a few months during the summertime after that crazy spring that we all experienced, and I am recharged and ready to begin season two. I appreciate the emails that so many of you have sent me wondering when the next season of the podcast was going to begin, and so many of you had fantastic ideas for podcasts, and please keep those coming because your suggestions help guide the path of this little show. So I thank you for that. Today, what we're going to be doing is investigating what makes a place a place, basically the cultural landscape of an area, and why some places seem so similar. You know, where we travel and we're like, I think I've been here before. You know, we have these little feelings of deja vu, and why some places like Rome are so very unique. So something that tends to trip up students of human geography when they're first learning the course is just discussing the concept of place. What is place? And place is simply a term that means, what is it like there? There are two different types of place. There's physical place. So that would be the actual physical environment of an area. So is it humid? Is it freezing cold? Is it high in the mountains? Is it coastal? And then there's human place. And human place, of course, is pretty much what we're discussing all throughout the course of human geography. It's how do humans change an area? How do they change a place? So when we're looking at the concept of cultural landscape, and so that's the first term I want to review. Cultural landscape is basically these combined properties of both nature and humans on an area, and what we have done to develop a given region. And it includes anything from, you know, the type of buildings that are built, maybe roads that are built, religious buildings, that kind of stuff, structures of where people live. And it includes the natural landscape of what was there before humans got there. The term cultural landscape comes from us from an American geographer named Carl Sauer. And those of you that are AP Human Geography students in particular, and actually human geography students, you need to know that name because he comes up a bunch throughout the class. The next term that I want to review with you is a term called toponym. It has Greek roots, and from the Greek, literally, when we're breaking it down, it means place name, so toponym. And anything that has nym refers to the concept of name. So, for instance, anonymous, nym is in there, or pseudonym, you know, a name that we go by. Those nym, anytime you hear the word nym or the root nym, that means name. So toponym just simply means place name. The third term I want to review with you is globalization. And globalization is just simply this concept of this interconnectivity between regions around the globe via international trade, outsourcing of manufacturing, and of course, technological diffusion. And globalization, as we've discussed before, has had some pretty amazing impacts on different countries, on all countries actually, around the planet. And when we break these down in just a little bit and go through some examples, you'll see how globalization has actually impacted the cultural landscape. The next term that I don't know if I love to review or not, but I really like making this connection with my students is this concept of placelessness. Placelessness is basically a condition where a particular place loses what makes it distinct and or what makes it unique from any other place. And the biggest cause of this is the rise of corporations and, of course, the connection of those corporations to globalization. And we'll discuss this much more in depth in just a minute. And then the final term that we're going to go over is this term of sequent occupancy. Sometimes you'll see it as sequent occupants. Either one of those is correct. But this is just this layering of civilization over time and how we have these remnants of past civilizations in a current cultural landscape. And of course, Rome, I was talking about Rome before. Rome is a great example of sequent occupants. You can stand in kind of like the bottom portion of the Roman Forum, and you could probably see layers of, 10, 15 civilizations just within one little city block. So when you look at the great cities on the planet, some of the older cities on the planet, you'll definitely see signs of sequent occupants. But probably where you live as well. I'm sure if your city or your town where you live is older than, let's say, 100 years old, you'll see remnants of that as well. So those are the terms that I want to discuss today. But now what I want to do is go a bit more in depth and unpack each one of these terms and give some examples and application of these terms so you have a really solid understanding of place. Okay, so let's apply the easiest, I think, out of all the terms, which is toponym. And remember, toponym is simply place name. So let's start with Houston. Houston is a toponym for a city in Southeast Texas, close to the Gulf of Mexico. New York, San Francisco, Florida, all of these are considered toponyms, right? They're place names. And of course, remember, this is kind of actually a really important point, that the toponym changes according to the language in which it's spoken. So for instance, I say I love going to Rome, but in Italy, the city is called Roma. It's not called Rome. Or Florence, if you want to travel to Florence, that would be Firenze. That would not be Florence. Someplace like Japan. Japan, we know it as Japan, but in Japan, they would call it Nihon. It wouldn't be Japan. So just kind of keep that in mind, especially when you're traveling. I know one time we had an incident where we were traveling through Italy and we were trying to take a train to the next city and we couldn't find the train. We couldn't find the train we needed to take on the platform listings. And of course, after about 10 minutes of frustration, we figured out it's because we were trying to look for the city in English instead of in the Italian form of the city. So just kind of keep that in mind with regards to toponyms. So let's get back to the term cultural landscape. Remember that the cultural landscape reflects the beliefs and values of a given culture. And of course, it includes the physical environment as well. So if we look at someplace like Rome, Rome just celebrated their 2,773rd birthday back in April. And if you look at a city like Rome, we know that it's, Mediterranean climate. So it's going to be kind of steamy in the summertime, a little bit more temperate in the wintertime. It's hilly. The hills are surrounding Rome. So that's the physical environment. Of course, it's on a peninsula, which we all know that boot of Italy. And it's surrounded by different seas. So you definitely, that influences the food culture. There's a lot of fresh fish, shellfish, fresh fruits and vegetables, and of course, tons and tons of wine from Italy, because we know the climate is perfect for that. So that's that physical environment that is expressed in the culture as well. And of course, if you look at Italian food and Italian culture, these are all things that you tend to associate with Italian culture. So then let's compare that. And I know I use Houston all the time, and that's where I'm from. But Houston is a place where nobody's really going to go visit Houston for the spectacular scenery. Okay, when you go to Italy or you go to someplace like Rome, you're going to want to drive around and look at the rolling hills and the beautiful, just the beautiful scenery. You're not going to say the same thing for Houston. Houston is very flat. It's on a coastal plain. And obviously, our weather here is tremendously impacted by the Gulf of Mexico. So it's humid subtropical. Yeah, it's great for your skin, not so great for your hair. And so that affects the culture of Houston as well. We're an air conditioning culture here. And in the summertime, If you're not in the pool, then you're probably going in your air with in your car. That's, you know, AC into the your house, which is AC as well, just because it's so hot here in the summertime. But Houston is a town that's very economically vibrant. And of course, you have the oil industry here that tends to make up a big part of the culture here, as well as the medical center and, of course, NASA, things like that. So those are all aspects that influence culture here in Houston. Now, no one would mistake, if I asked you to Google image search Rome and, you know, grab those screenshots and then Google image search Houston, no one would mistake Houston from Rome, okay? And that's what we're looking for the cultural landscape. It's the cultural landscape is the combination of the history, of the physical geography, of the just the cultural environment, the religious traditions, all of those things, the values of a culture on the physical landscape. Okay, so let's move on to globalization. There is a really famous picture of Shanghai in China. Actually, it's several pictures. You could, if you were to Google image search or just image search on your favorite browser, Shanghai 1980s, you'll find it. It's a picture of Shanghai in the 1980s, and then there's like a split in the photograph, and you could see Shanghai in the 2000s and like the 2010s. And you could see just this massive difference. You know, the first image has these really kind of traditional European almost architecture that you see in Shanghai. And then in the 2000s, you see this just incredible difference in architecture, just these really modern buildings. Some really famous ones like the Oriental Pearl Tower, you'll recognize it. It looks kind of almost like a ball smashed in the middle of a tower. The Shanghai Tower is a really, really famous one as well. So in looking at the landscape of Shanghai, you can really see over the past 20 to 25 years, just this incredible shift due to globalization. Now, in my previous season, it was one of the China, China, China podcasts. I think it was the first one, where I talked about globalization and how globalization works. And if you're not sure familiar with that, I definitely suggest you go back and listen to that one. But the thing with globalization, you know, with the outsourcing and offshoring of companies from MDCs to LDCs, that movement is also bringing culture. So in addition to bringing, you know, the economic force of having businesses go from MDCs to LDCs or developing countries, the culture is also being moved as well. And of course, that culture changes the cultural landscape of a place like Shanghai. So one thing I love to do is to kind of hang out on Google Maps and just zoom in a little bit to see what's on the ground. And if you were to pull up Google Maps, if you happen to be a place where you could pull up Google Maps, and you go into Shanghai and just zoom in about as far as you can get, and look at some of the restaurants, just kind of do a little search for restaurants. You'll see all kinds of, there's tons of Starbucks. You'll see KFCs, just names that you would know. There's one here I'm looking at right now called New York City Deli. So you can definitely see the impact on the cultural landscape due to MDCs working with developing countries and LDCs through the process of globalization. Okay, so next let's turn our attention to sequent occupancy or sequent occupants. Either one of those works just fine to identify what we're about to discuss. This is where you have this layering of civilizations over time. A city that's older, especially if you're looking at a city that's 1,000 years old, several thousand years old, you know, look at a place like Paris or London or Rome. We've already discussed Rome before. You can see remnants of cultures that have been gone for thousands or several thousand years. Look at a country like Egypt, a city like Cairo, right? This is a place that has been controlled by multiple civilizations, by pharaohs and Greeks and Romans and Arab cultures, the British. All of those cultures left cultural imprints on the landscape, in the architecture, and the languages. Just look at Cairo. You know, you've got Giza, the city of Giza, which is basically now a suburb of Cairo. And there's a really, really famous picture of being able to view Giza, the pyramids at Giza, from a KFC. So it's just this great mishmash of culture and globalization. You know, 2,500 years of civilization plus fried chicken. And of course, that kind of speaks to globalization. And it also speaks to sequin occupancy. Okay, so we've arrived at the last of our five terms surrounding the cultural landscape. And it's really one of my favorite ones to lecture about with my students. And this is this concept of placelessness. And I think the reason, part of the reason why I enjoy lecturing about it is because I live it. So let's discuss patterns for a second. Remember, I've discussed this before, humans love patterns. Our brains are actually wired for patterns. It's one of the things that we do as a baby from the very beginning. You know, we look at human faces, we look at patterns. Think about maybe the matching games that you played when you were a toddler, you know, where you try to match pictures and then, you know, put them back together, or puzzles, or any number of different things. We love patterns. Placelessness is just simply making a place recognizable even if you're halfway around the world. Remember, placelessness is something when you see it, you recognize it because it looks similar to places you've been before. So I've told you before, I live in Houston. Houston is just a gigantic metroplex with tons of subdivisions, master plan communities, and they do all tend to look the same. If you're in the north part of Houston and you drive to the southern part of Houston, then you go to these outlying suburban areas, they're going to look exactly the same. So that domination of an area that has, you know, restaurants and shops and things that are corporations that you know that are global, and that also lacks an area with a significant historical presence, maybe historical architecture or landmarks, that's placelessness. So where I live is a great example of placelessness. The area surrounding me, I live in a subdivision, and the houses, they're pretty much cookie cutter. So my next door neighbor may not have the same exact house that I have, but maybe a couple of doors down somebody might, or maybe it might be the same house, different brick on the outside, flip floor plan, but it's the same. The shops surrounding me, for the most part, are going to be major corporations that are, you're going to see shops any place else. So a McDonald's or a Chick-fil-A, a Target or a Walmart, a Best Buy, Lowe's, any number of those stores that are basically stores that you would see across the country. Where I live might not look much different than a place, let's say, in New York. Maybe the physical geography might look different, but if it's a relatively new area, it's going to have the same type of look. And that's what I mean by placelessness. No matter where you go on the planet, if it's going to be someplace new, if it's dominated by a corporate culture type of architecture, it's going to look the same. There's really no difference between where I live and maybe where you live, even if you're across the planet, let's say in Australia, if it's a newer area. And the reason why makes a lot of sense when you think about it. From a marketing point of view, these big companies, they are in the business to make money. And of course, more money comes from more customers. And customers like going to places where they feel comfortable. So let's say you're traveling. Of course, you know I'm in Houston. Let's say I'm going from Houston to someplace like Chicago. I'm going to probably go, if I need to go to the store, I'm probably going to go to a store that I recognize, that I'm familiar with, because I feel comfortable going there because I've been there before. I recognize the signage. I recognize the food. And especially when you travel, you really begin to see this concept of placelessness. I remember when the first time I traveled over to England and got off the plane and in Heathrow, there was a Starbucks. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to Starbucks and go get a cup of coffee. It was kind of silly when you think about it, because what I should have done is I should have gone to someplace new and tried, you know, a different coffee in a new place. But that comfort of a place that I'm familiar with, that's what businesses are banking on. That's why they spend so much time on signage and interior design and all those things for these massive corporations. And of course, for these companies, it's just cheaper, right? I mean, this is pretty much the assembly lineification. I don't think that's a word, but we'll use it. The assembly lineification of place, where you have companies, global companies, whether they're Starbucks or Best Buy or whatever they are, and it's cheaper for them to have the same store look the same way, have the same signage, to replicate that any place on the planet. But that reduction in cost for these companies does come with a price. And the consequence of this is a loss of an authentic culture. And this loss of culture is what makes people feel threatened. So, for instance, I know a few years back in Rome, they were talking about putting Starbucks at certain places around Rome, like by the Spanish Steps and some other kind of main touristy places. And there was some significant pushback in, amongst the Roman community, because the Italians, they take their coffee very seriously. And it was kind of an anathema to them to think that you would have a corporation like Starbucks come in and try and serve coffee to Romans that would not be in the Italian style. If you want to test and see if the area where you live is surrounded by this concept of placelessness, the easiest way to do that is to pull up Google Maps and start zooming in at some of the stores that surround you, some of the restaurants, some of the shops, and see if the names that you see around you are big names, so big corporation names, like what we, some of the ones that we discussed before, or if they're more smaller individual shops. And of course, with COVID, unfortunately, a lot of these smaller shops are now going out of business because they do not have the financial resources to sustain these, you know, being closed for such a long time. I read something online the other day that said that up to 50% of all restaurants will now be shut down. So in addition to all of the other long-term impacts that we're seeing from COVID, part of what will continue to occur is this increased sense of placelessness, because those mom and pop shops, they just can't survive being closed. Well, okay, that's all the time we have for today. I really hope that you walked away with a better understanding of what makes a place, and obviously, we've just scratched the surface of this topic. There are people that spend their entire lives studying the various facets of what makes up a cultural landscape. Please click subscribe to support this podcast and to get all the latest updates as they happen. And as always, please feel free to email me at bitesizehumangeo@gmail.com with any questions or topics that you'd like addressed on this podcast.